everyone, and welcome to Your Health Rocks. I'm your host, Dr. Maish Seibel, a professor at the University of Massachusetts Medical School, and we are today having the privilege of speaking with Aileen Zolbrod, and she is a nationally known sex therapist and author of several books on sex and sexuality. Her most recent is Sex Smart: How Your Childhood Shaped Your Sexual Life and What You Can Do About It. So, Aileen, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you, Maish. It's great to be here.
You know, sex is a pretty big topic. It's one of the biggest things that affects people's life. And having a good and a natural and fulfilling sexual life is a very important part of everyone, whether they're single or they're in a couple's relationship. So maybe we can talk a little bit about sexuality per se, and maybe what's different about women's sexuality and desire compared to men's.
Okay. I'm happy to talk about that. I think if I were going to say one general thing about sexuality in general, it would be don't believe anything you see in the media, in movies, or read about in books, because past the lust stage, being sexual with someone that you're very attached to, emotionally attached to, is not the wild thing you see portrayed in the movies. And if you think everything should be perfect and people should be aroused at the blink of a button without hardly having to touch each other, you will be sorely disappointed and feel defective.
So there's no way to push the button and say you're on and things are working perfectly. There may be more to it than just that.
Well, absolutely. One of my favorite colleagues, whose name is Leonora Tiefer, talks about the dishwasher cycle image of sex, Mm-hmm. And she says, since Masters and Johnson, everyone's idea about sex is it's this perfect cycle. It should happen sequentially. And if you use the, you know, if you turn on the dishwasher, first there should be the preheat, and then there should be the washing cycle, and then there should be the rinsing cycle, and then there should be the blowing dry cycle. And if all those things don't happen in exactly that sequence, then you didn't have sex right.
Or you should wash my hand.
You know, and that kind of image where it's all so goal-oriented actually gives people performance anxiety. Mm-hmm. So my definition of good sex in a committed couple is you don't know exactly what's going to happen when you get into bed. All you know is it's going to be worth doing. And good sex in a committed relationship involves asking for favors and making yourself vulnerable that way. It's not something that you could do perfectly or not perfectly.
So it's not a scoring kind of a thing. You know, it's funny,
right?
Because when you're at school, the word score is sometimes what's tied into sex. You know, we're going to score tonight, this kind of a thing.
But, right.
But it couldn't be further from that in reality. It's not about scoring or a score, but really about an intimacy shared between people who are satisfying each other in whatever way is working at that moment.
Right, and you know, really intimate sex involves asking for sexual favors, and something that's very hard for people, you know, giving gentle, nice feedback or asking for what you want that will help you become orgasmic or have more pleasure. And, you know, if I had a nickel for every woman I see in my office or man I see in my office where they tell me something they wish they could say to their partner, but they've never said it to their partner, mm-hmm, I would be extremely rich. It's very, very common that people actually lie in bed wishing for a particular kind of touch or wishing that the person would do something different, and they don't say anything, so they're not having pleasure.
Well, wait a minute. Are you telling me that just because you have something in your mind and expect your partner to read your mind, it doesn't always happen like that?
That's exactly right, especially in the whispering tone.
Yeah. No, I'm pulling your leg, of course. What I'm saying is that your partner may be wonderful, your life partner, the person who cares most about you, but he or she may not be able to read your mind. That's what I'm saying.
I know. They for certain are not going to be reading your mind, and if you're hoping for that, you're sabotaging your own sex life.
Mm-hmm. And certainly losing one of maybe what you're calling the number one opportunity to optimize your sex life is just, hey, if you say what you want, you may be surprised and get exactly what you want. And if you don't say a darn thing, you may be just terribly disappointed. Why can't that person read my mind anyway? So you're telling me that if a person actually asks for what they want, they may be pleasantly surprised and get exactly what they want. And if they try and keep it a secret, they may be terribly disappointed because their partner is not going to be a good mind reader.
Exactly. But there are some tricks to asking for what you want in exactly the way you want to ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a really good topic to lend on because I don't think people are very good about giving feedback in a constructive way.
Mm-hmm.
One thing you can do ahead of time, if you're someone who realizes from listening to our chat that you are really frustrated in bed and that there's something you want to say to your partner, then you can do a little paper and pencil exercise. So I would make the following list for yourself. I would make a list of things that you could criticize about your partner's sexual skills or taste, which would really hurt him or her. I would make a list of things you could tell your partner about other partners you've had, if you had any, which could really threaten him or her. I would make a list of things you could criticize about your partner's body, which would wound him or her. I would make a list of things you could remind your partner about his or her past behavior, which would really shame his or her. So the first thing you have to realize if you're giving sexual feedback and you want it to get up closer sexually is don't ever say any of the things on that list right now.
That's a no-fly zone.
Yeah, that's the no-fly zone, so don't do that. And then the next thing I would say is if you want to get someone to change something while you're in the middle of being sexual and you know not to go to any of those bad places, if you want them to stop doing something that they are in the middle of doing, the best thing to do is not want them to be a mind reader. It doesn't always work to move the person's hand. So often what does work is to say to them, could you please go back and do blah, 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 some more. So ask them to go back to doing whatever was the last thing that they were doing that was pleasing to you.
There's no
negative in that.
That's really great suggestions. And, you know, that works not only in the bed. That would work at the dinner table. That would work at the movie, at the theater. That would basically work probably interacting with your mother or your mother-in-law or your kids, your dog,
right. Anything.
Because basically, telling somebody that something that's on your mind doesn't work very well if what you're saying is saying, look, fool, I've tried to tell you before, I don't like it when you do that, might be different ones. You know, you were touching me a certain way a moment ago that made me feel so good. Would you mind doing that again?
Right.
So I think that that's just fantastic advice for anybody, and not only in the sexual
way. The other thing I would say that is a good thing to do is, and it takes practice for some people, if someone is doing something wonderful, make some noise. Mm. You don't have to sound like a porn star. Just make some noise that sounds like you're happy. So it could be sighing or deep breathing or just saying yum or oh, that's great or something like that. If you want them to keep doing it, they cannot read what's going on in your body, so you can get a lot more of what you want by doing that.
So communication is really a key, and communication should be begun with the adjective good communication.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's pretty important, and it resonates, for everything.
Yes.
Well, what I want to do now is to take a minute and pause here. I'd like to play you a song to introduce, and the song is Girls Are From Venus, Men Are From Mars. That's kind of a fun song that I wrote some time ago. And we'll use that as a segue to talk about women's sexual desires, women's sexuality, and how men are from Venus and women are from Mars, or vice versa. But anyway, different views depending on where you're coming from. And after this song, we'll be back and continue our discussion with Aileen Zolbrod about women's sexuality, sexuality in general, and how you can optimize your sex lives. Stay tuned.
Girls are from Venus, guys are from Mars. Women talk feelings, men talk cars. Girls understand things can be bad or good. Men understand things under the hood. A woman says, I'm suffering, I've lost my ovaries. A fella says, it could be worse, you could have wrecked your knees. Guys are from Mars, girls are from Venus. Girls understand loss, guys understand penis. Girls think about love and hugging and kissing. Guys think about the sports TV they're missing. A woman says, I'm different since my hysterectomy. Her fella says, don't worry, dear, it feels the same to me. The sexes have differed since Adam and Eve, since they ate the apple and had to wear leaves. One day men will get it and understand more about the ladies they adore.
Well, okay, we're back. I hope you enjoyed that song, and we're talking with Aileen Zolbrod, who's a nationally known sex therapist who resides in the Boston area, and she is the author of a number of books. Most recently, her book is called Sex Smart: How Your Childhood Shaped Your Sexual Life and What You Can Do About It. So we were in the process of talking a little bit about men and women and their differences, and maybe we could talk a little bit about that, because I think that's very important. A lot of times, a lot of communication gets lost on the communication, and a lot of that is just perspective of what's supposed to be done and what's not. So maybe we could address that.
Okay. I think there are so many important differences between what women want sexually and what men want sexually, and part of the reason that a lot of people are in sexless marriages where they're not having sex more than once a month or once every other month is because someone is not getting their needs met. It often, I have to say, it's the women. Because if you look at the statistics on sexual desire disorders, women tend to have a greater rate of sexual desire disorders. So let's, you know, I think it's worth talking about all the many reasons why so many women have difficulty really enjoying sex.
Absolutely.
The first thing that is so classical and everyone knows about on some level is that women are still socialized to be less comfortable with their own sexuality and sexual urges than men are.
Mm-hmm.
I think that maybe it's less true with really young women, but I'm not so sure. I think once you get past the hooking up stage and it's a more serious relationship, I think women still have difficulty really asking for what they want.
Mm-hmm.
There is still a double standard. There still are religious inhibitions that tell you that it's not really okay to get turned on. And there are a lot of family issues with being inhibited. I even now I see people where, you know, one sister says to another sister who has a boyfriend, you know, be really careful what you do. I don't want you to bring any shame on our family. Or a woman who came to see me for desire and arousal problems who told me about growing up in her family, and her mother would say things like, now Jeanette was sitting on Billy's lap and you know what that means. Or her father would say to her about her sister who was going out for a date, she looked like a dog in heat. You know, just a lot of really disparaging comments about a woman who might be interested in sex, and that's still going on.
That's really very negative messaging, which we alluded to earlier. And as I mentioned jokingly before, not bad to use positive messaging in any aspect of relationships, not necessarily sexual, and that one really distorts the reality. And of course, you know, we still hear in certain parts of the Middle East and other places where there is, there's the genital mutilations in Africa and the stoning of women in the Middle East, etc. So there is an international double standard.
Oh, gosh. If you're talking cross-culturally,
right. This
is really a profound cause of women's sexual suffering. Murders are committed because someone's brought shame
right.
on their family.
And that's when you really say, my sex life is killing me. I mean, that's what...
we shouldn't laugh about that, though.
No, well, we laugh tongue-in-cheek. But
I think all of us, if you think about it, there are certain kinds of comments that tend to just ring in people's ears decades after they're mm-hmm. said. You know, the woman who told me about her mother saying, "Oh, Billy, you know, Janine's sitting on Billy's lap, and you know what that means," or the father said, "She looks like a dog." And those were comments that were made decades before, and they're still floating around in her unconscious, coming out and scaring her when she gets more turned on than she was expecting from kissing her husband.
So what you're saying is that a comment
made... One of the things you have to do is really look at some of those inhibitions.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's a way to get through them, too. You just have to admit that they're there. One technique that I talk about in my book, Sex Talk, is... actually trying to create for yourself what I call a disinhibition coach, which would involve getting in touch with either a friend or someone who you think of as being really sexy, whoever that turns out to be, whether mm-hmm. it's Angelina Jolie or Estelle or whoever you think is really sexy as a woman, and imagine, it could be a friend, a cousin, someone that you admire because they seem to be at one with their sexuality,
mm-hmm.
and try and imagine when you have a negative thought what they would say to you.
So you're saying to role play with yourself and think,
yeah.
I know a woman who's really together, like Lady Gaga in her beef dress, and and I wonder what Lady Gaga or Angelina Jolie or whomever it is would say if she were in this situation.
Yeah, what she'd say to me. She'd say, mm-hmm. You go, girl.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. You like that. Let yourself go. Get into your body. That's wonderful.
And what you try to do is encourage people to turn off those tapes that originate maybe decades ago from comments that could have been a parent made or a sibling made or a friend made about some behavior, or even a stranger made, and it just sticks in your gut and it ruminates around there when you feel aroused and rises up again and makes you feel either nasty or unclean or
oversexed. Distracts you.
Yeah, so that those things that derail you and distract you, figure out how to ignore them, let them pass by, acknowledge them, but just don't get stuck with them because they
right.
take you off your path to happiness in a sexual way.
Exactly. So I think that this inhibition coach is actually maybe useful right when you're actually in the middle of being sexual. But there's another technique that I like that's from one of my friends, hero of mine, is a psychologist named Arnold Lazarus, and he came up with a technique where, if your mother said things to you like, when you wear a short skirt like that, you look like a tramp, or, something she said that makes you feel really creepy when you get very aroused, you, not when you're having sex, some other time when you're on, you imagine her saying that, and you imagine her body shrinking down until it's the size of a pea, and you have it on the flat part of your palm, and then with your other hand, you just flick her off.
Mm.
Into the sky, and get rid of that message.
So this is a new way to F off somebody. You just flick off that person.
That's right. So that you're more in control of these negative beliefs. You don't just let yourself bathe in negative cognitions.
Well, you know, we're joking a little bit because it's a topic that's awkward, uncomfortable, a little embarrassing for a lot of people to even hear, much less talk about. But what you're offering is some very sound advice. What you're saying is we can't control all of the muck that we've had to wade through in our lifetime, but where our control comes in is the ability to repurpose that bad information, those hurtful comments, those distracting points that were made. Take that information, repackage it in a way that you can handle it and file it somewhere far away from you, and don't be a victim of your own thoughts. That's what you're trying to say, I think.
Right.
So, now, do people have real disinhibition coaches, or are they fictional ones that you kind of...
Well, I think there are probably, you know, as a sex therapist, I am many, many people's disinhibition coach.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you don't need a sex therapist. You just need to be able to imagine someone else giving you approval for having sex. The mm-hmm. other thing, I guess, if I were going to talk to women and say, here, please remember this, is I want people to understand that a lot of women have this idea that the only people who deserve to have sex are people, women who are beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always probably been a problematic notion, but it's becoming really dramatically problematic now as the women that we see in fashion magazines and on the media are actually physical specimens that are impossible to emulate because they're unbelievably thin, and then they've all had breast implants. So there are bodies that are not found in nature.
Mm-hmm.
So if you tell yourself that you don't deserve to have sex unless you look like that, then only 0.00001% of women is going to ever deserve, quote unquote, to have sex, and it will be left to porn stars and, you know, A-list actresses.
You know, it's interesting because I've always said that the most important sex organ is your brain. And what you are saying is really another way of putting it, because what you're saying is that a difficulty in having a satisfying sexual experience can come from other people giving negative input to you. But just as importantly, you can be giving yourself negative input in the sense that you're telling yourself that you don't deserve to have sex be satisfied because you're not pretty enough or not.
Absolutely.
You know,
This is not just my opinion. This is backed by very good research.
Mm-hmm.
That women who don't like their bodies enjoy sex less, want sex less.
So if you're a person who's like 100 pounds overweight and you lose 50 pounds and now you're much more close to an ideal body weight, the deal is to embrace yourself anyway, but not put weight as a reason to be unhappy. It's because you're not healthy when you weigh too much, and that you want to encourage yourself to lose weight for that purpose, but not because you're not worthy.
Absolutely.
I had a patient one time who had a very bad abdominal scar, and she was really an attractive woman, but because of this rather jagged abdominal scar, she felt very ugly. It was just an unfortunate outcome of an emergency operation. And so she never felt good or pretty, despite the fact that if you saw her, you would think she was just quite lovely. And so we talked about either doing one of a couple of things, you know, like just something simple, like turning the lights off, or down significantly, or just wearing a negligee, just so it covered the part that it was uncomfortable for her, and just that alone was enough to give her permission to just change the experience around. So it doesn't have to be major modifications in people. It can just be acknowledging what's upsetting and thinking about it.
Exactly. And guess what, Mish? At that point, you were her disinhibition coach.
I guess so.
When you said that to her. You said, hey, look, this is a problem for you, and I can, you know, I think it's a good thing for you to be able to enjoy your body and be in your body, and here's something you could do. So, and we're beautifully.
It worked great. And it's a simple thing, and that's the whole point, is acknowledging. And what you're telling people is you're explaining to people now, listen, think about what's going in your mind when it isn't going well in bed. Are you hearing thoughts from someone else? Are you hearing thoughts from your own mind that's coming in there and clouding it up? In other words, how can you just push those thoughts back so that you're free to allow your body and spirit to enjoy the moment that you're intimate with someone that you care about?
Exactly.
Now, you talked about the fact in some of your writings and so forth that women are more distractible. And
Right. They
like, you know, they have different preferences. You know, the lust phase, you call it. Maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Okay. Well, these are two separate. These are two separate issues.
Okay.
So, in terms of one major difference between men and women in their sexuality, once men are, you know, assuming that a man has, you know, reasonable sexual functioning, by and large, once a man is aroused enough, men have what's called the point of ejaculatory inevitability.
Mm-hmm.
So that means once they're really, really, really aroused, even if a small child walked into their bedroom while they were having intercourse, or even if they suddenly got a fleeting thought that the IRS was auditing their taxes, it wouldn't matter. They would ejaculate an orgasm.
Even if the other team scored on their scored while they were watching.
Right.
Even then they would. Go ahead.
That's right. And women do not have any such thing. And so that's on a physiological level, there's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's a social difference that actually makes a social factor that makes the fact that women are more able to be distracted much more poisonous for women, and that is women's social role. Women are trained to take care of everyone in the family, and when women have children, which the majority of women have, then they have their sense of what they need, but what they need is completely, completely absorbed with what their kid needs, what the other people in the family need, and not only what the other people in the family need right then, but what are the other people in the family going to need in 3 hours and in a day and in a week and a year? What does the house need?
Mm-hmm.
Men don't tend to be like that. You know, most of the typical female tasks are circular. They have to be done over and over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And most male tasks are linear. So, you know, a man who's stressed may be too stressed for sex, but once whatever the task is that he wanted to do is over, he can get going on sex. And if he gets aroused enough, he will have an orgasm, ejaculate and have an orgasm. A woman can be distracted even if she's in the middle of having a really good time and her arousal's pretty hard, if she happens to think for a second, oh my God, Billy needs to have brownies for his school fair and I didn't bake them. So pretend she's like 80% of the way to being aroused enough to orgasm. She's got that much pleasure in her body. The minute she thinks about those brownies, her level of arousal goes back a lot. And in order to actually go to orgasm, she has to be able to give herself permission to ask for more stimulation, to ask for what she wants. That goes back to the asking for permission. She might even have to go back and ask for some kind of stimulation that isn't really that appealing or erotic to her partner. She may have to say, I'm sorry, I lost my concentration. Can you scratch my back? Or can you kiss my hair? Can you pull my ears? Or whatever it is she likes. It might not be so genital. It might be something that isn't as overtly sexual because she has to go back and build from the 50% mark and get aroused again. Well, a lot of women don't do that. A lot of women don't have the time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So they just kind of bail and go, okay, I don't care. And they don't have an orgasm and they don't enjoy sex as much as they might. Well, if you keep having something like that and you don't realize that you're more distractible than he is, and you have to, if you're straight, and it's a straight couple, But if you know, if you don't realize that you're more distractible than a male partner is, and if you don't take responsibility for asking for what you want and for keeping yourself on the path, you won't enjoy very much sex. Because good sex begets more good sex, you know?
And that would include if the male has already reached his inevitability point, as you described, and the male has already ejaculated, that doesn't mean he's off the hook for helping you get to your end point.
Definitely not.
And so you're still free to ask what it is that would help you at that point. He may not be able to maintain an erection, but he may very well be able to stimulate you in some other way, and you could ask for that until the point that you're able to achieve, the woman is able to achieve an orgasm as well.
That's right, and that goes back, you know, whether someone would be willing and able to do that goes back to all those other socialization factors. You have to feel really good about yourself as a sexual person, your body, what you deserve, and asking for things in order to make that happen.
Now, you know, one of the things that I have done to try and avoid what you're talking about with the distractibility is I will tell couples, you know, at least every 3 months, is to take a mini vacation. And a mini vacation for me means, you know, just the two of you, just take the night out and check into a hotel room. It doesn't have to be very far away. You don't even have to spend the night. You can just go away so that you can have your intimacy without the dog coming in, without the kids yelling for stuff, without your parents calling up because they need help with something at their home, or all the distractions that happen. And just take the time out to go for dinner and a little bit of personal time. And it can be done rather inexpensively so that it's achievable for anyone. And I don't know, what do you think of that as a concept?
I think that's a great idea. I want to piggyback on that, though, because mm-hmm. there will be people who are listening who don't even have the money to do that, because it doesn't have to be wildly expensive, but it might be more expensive than they can do now. I have this exercise which I call Sex Night for Parents.
Uh-huh.
It's for people who have smaller kids, because it wouldn't work when you have adolescents. But what, you know, one of the big problems is people think they have this illusion that they should be able to have really good sex in a very short amount of time,
mm-hmm.
you know, like 45 minutes. And most people, especially women, want to get a good night's sleep, because being a parent takes a lot of energy, and you're very cranky in the morning and could be mean to your kids if you haven't had enough sleep. So for a lot of people, and a lot of women particularly, they want to be able to have a nice time in the bedroom and get a good night's sleep. So the trick is to give up on the idea that you should be able to go out for dinner and a movie and have good sex.
Mm-hmm.
You can forget about it. That will not work. So here's my little recipe. So if you have little kids, you plan the day. You do not agree to any other social things for that night. You do not run around too much during that day, although everyone's running around with the kids for soccer and whatever. You do not plan on cooking. You feed the kids however you need to feed them. Get them mm-hmm. some takeout. Nothing where you have to do dishes. Get some movies for the family to watch, and get some movies for yourself to watch.
I'm liking this so far.
Turn off the phone at 6 o'clock. Eat dinner with the kids, but you're just using paper. You throw it out. You throw some movie on for the kids. You get them to sleep at a reasonable hour. So like and don't eat too much food. That's very important. So about, let's just say for the sake of argument, by 9:30 or 10 at the very latest, and maybe 8:30, your children are asleep and you're not very tired because you didn't just spend the last hour and a half cooking and cleaning up. And if you're not going to be in the mood yet, get a sexy movie. It doesn't have to be porn, just something like Pretty Woman or An Officer and a Gentleman or whatever your favorite sexy movie is. Watch that for a while, and you'll still have an hour to make love in a very nice gourmet fashion and go to sleep and wake up and be a human being the next day.
That's very nice.
Cost hardly any money.
Mm-hmm. That's a great tip. And the overeating doesn't cause all the blood to run to your stomach and make you tired.
You know?
It's excellent. It's something that everybody should be able to accomplish in their homes, as you said, until the kids become a little bit older, which becomes more challenging. But then 4 years later, they're all going to be out of the house anyway, and you can start all over with Dr. Zolbrod's recipe for a great night in the house at low expense and high reward and a great sex night.
Right.
That's excellent.
And it really, honestly, it does work. It's been tested and tried and tested in my very own family.
That's great. Can't get any better than that.
No, it really does work. People are surprised.
Now, you've talked about in terms of the that women have certain things that they are looking for, and you talk about the four T's. And maybe we might ask you to just expand on the four T's for just a moment.
Okay. Well, the four T's that I've talked about in, you know, all the books I write are, you have to have trust, and that's a really big one.
Yeah, trust.
Trust that the person really does love you, that they're on your team, that when the chips are down, they will be there for you. So, you know, if there are people who have sexual problems and they think they're strictly sexual problems and they're really issues that are relationship oriented.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in an unhappy marriage or you're really angry at your partner, here's another big difference between men and women that has been proved in research. Horny, angry men are still horny, and horny, angry women are not horny. So, you know, if the relationship has a lot of problems, the trust dimension is affected.
Mm-hmm.
And as a sex therapist, we know to screen for that, because if there are marital problems and you have what you call a distressed couple where they are attributing all kinds of negative motives to each other, it's very unlikely that they're going to have a nice sexual relationship.
Yes, one lady told me, she, you know, was talking about, she said, at first I thought I needed testosterone. And then I realized I didn't need testosterone. I needed different testosterone.
That's right.
Because the guy she was with just wasn't in a trusting relationship. And I guess we would have to expand trust. At least I want to make sure and ask you, would that would be also trust that the partner is not going to hurt them or do anything?
Of course. Oh, that goes without saying.
Yeah.
Because here, this is, we're talking about being as vulnerable as you humanly are.
Mm-hmm.
In a relationship.
When you expose your most sensitive spots, whether they're emotional or physical spots, you want to entrust them to somebody who's going to respect them and be gentle with them.
Right. It has to be someone you don't think is going to zing you. It has to be someone you don't think is in a negative power relationship with you. So, you know, if people out there are listening and wondering if, in fact, their relationship is troubled and they don't intuitively know, they're on my website, which is sexsmart.com. There, under the couples section, there's a 20-question couples quiz. And you can fill it out, your partner can fill it out, and it actually points up areas. One of the areas is sex, but there are 20 questions. So there are 19 other questions that kind of help you figure out how good you're feeling about the relationship. If you're not feeling very good about the relationship and you don't trust the person, then the other three T's are not going to be as relevant. So mm-hmm. trust is the first T.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of women, talk is the second T, which can be can be problematic for men who don't really like to talk.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, talk that's emotionally intimate just is I-thou talk that is immediately about you and me and our relationship. It's not who's going to drive this kid there and, you know, what's going to happen with our finances here. So it's talk where people reveal some important, vulnerable things about themselves. So one of my friends says foreplay is whatever has happened for the previous 24 hours in the relationship.
Well, that's
good.
That
there's... Yeah, that's good, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. I think that it's important to have a timeout on me, 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 and a timeout on them, and have a just us time, so that it's, you're saying, make the last 24 hours, what did you like about that, what made us close at that, those kinds of things that felt...
Yeah, which is, I mean, honestly, just talking and listening. It doesn't have to be hours. You know, if someone is going off to, pretend they're a working mother and they're going off to a meeting where they don't like their boss and they're really worried about their presentation, you know, if you come home that evening and your partner says to you, "How did that go, honey? I know you were worried about it," you'll feel closer to that person because you know they're on your team.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's caring.
Right. So you feel like, that was really sweet. Thank you for asking, honey. Here's what happened. So if it was good and they share your pleasure and your success, that's wonderful. And if it went badly and you get sad and they make you feel better, that's wonderful because then you feel closer,
mm-hmm.
right?
Absolutely.
Then there's the time dimension, by which I mean lots of different things, but one of the ways I mean it is that this notion that women need more time to warm up. You have to remember, mm-hmm. men are microwaves, women are crock pots. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of my patients said this cute thing. She said, I need time to punch out my mom card. You know? Mm-hmm. And you do, if you're a mom. You need time to punch out your mom card. You need some time to get back into your own body.
To shift gears.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's, and the last one is touch. Women need a lot of touch, and women need touch that's different from the kind of touch that men like and men need. So that is a major difference between men and women, a major source of miscommunication. Men tend to be like to be touched right on their genitals, and they often, I'm not saying always, but they often like to be touched on their genitals fast, and they can get aroused fast, especially young men. And most women past the lust phase, they don't want to be touched in their primary erogenous zones. They don't. They want to be touched in secondary erogenous zones, which are, you know, things, areas like their inner thigh. And they like to be touched, men like to be touched with a very firm amount of pressure usually, and women often like less firm touch. So if you think about the golden rule, if men are going by the golden rule and they're doing to women what they would want done to them, they're actually not going to make their partner very happy.
Well, that goes back to our very first part of our discussion, which is the communication part, which is
right.
Just in case, you know, I guess there's, you know, as Mark Twain said, all generalizations are inaccurate, including this one. But in general, what you're saying is absolutely true. But just in case, just ask, is this something that you're enjoying, or is there something you'd like me to do? That might be a helpful question or two to ask, and then you'll know. Or is it something you'd prefer me do? What would make you feel good? Is there something else that I could do to make you feel good? And I think that's important, because that's the culminating issue of the time, the talk, the trust, the touch. And part of the talk is making sure that you're asking the question, what can I do to help you feel better?
True. Although, honestly, this difference between men and women is so profound that most women will get really annoyed because they often have already corrected their partner.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just something men need to learn about women. Because women get annoyed if they have to keep asking for the same thing over and over. This is different from the lying in bed, wishing and hoping that the person would do that and such thing. Because this is just a general difference between men and women.
Mm-hmm.
So sophisticated man will already know that his wife or his girlfriend, if they're a straight partner, his wife or his girlfriend likes to be touched more gently and doesn't want him to go right for her breast or her genitals, and that is a slow buildup.
Well, can they be taught with patience and with practice?
Yes, and vice versa. I mean, you know, certainly. One of my patients said to me, you know, I've given up on asking my girlfriend for a hand job because she's just so rough, and I feel like saying to her, "This is not like pulling rutabagas out of the garden."
Mm. That does sound like a rough go. So let me ask you a question. For just as a side point on this, for people as they get to be in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond, a lot of times, all of these points will continue to resonate and form the basis for a good intimate relationship. But are there a couple of tips that you could offer to people as age becomes an issue, or relationships have gone on for a long time and they're trying to refresh and reinvigorate? Are there a couple pointers you might offer?
Sure. Well, one thing I want to say to women is that if, you know, as women get older, the skin on their vagina starts to thin out and atrophy. And so if you were someone who had a wonderful sexual relationship and intercourse is being, it's become to be painful, there are some things you can do. I think you should go to your physician and see what he or she is willing to do for you.
Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of vaginal moisturizers or things you can
Yeah,
do.
You know, there's one people should know about that they tend not to know about. It's called Replenz. It's mm-hmm. not cheap.
It's a wonderful product.
It's a wonderful product. It has no hormones in it, and it attracts moisture to the tissues of the vagina. But it isn't something you put in right before you're going to have intercourse. It's something you use a couple times a week, mm-hmm. and it attracts moisture. And that is a product that is appropriate for people, even if they've had different kinds of gynecological or breast cancers, and people are being cautious and don't want them to have estrogen.
Right, it's a moisturizer versus a lubricant.
Right. And then, you know, there are all kinds of new lubricants that are wonderful, and there are some other products that are advertised as women's arousal fluids. One of them is Zestra, and some of them actually do work. So, you know, sometimes people, as they get older, actually don't get as aroused, because women and men's arousal is determined by testosterone. So if you're someone who really loved sex already, then don't be afraid to try some of these products and see if they help you. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's a great thing to do.
That was called Zestra? Zestra?
Zestra, Z-E-S-T-R-A. I have no financial stake in any of this stuff.
That's the one that causes vasodilation, right? Or supposed to?
Yeah. You don't put it right on your clitoris. It actually burns if you put it right on your clitoris, but you put it on your vulva, mm-hmm. and it does do something. It warms it up. It's an interesting product. And, you know, men need to know that they don't have to be rock hard, and it's going to take them longer to get hard. And that's okay. And then some women actually are very happy if their partner would use something like Viagra. So it's the communication thing. I mean, I think men taking Viagra without asking their partners doesn't work very well, or Cialis or any of them. But, you know, it's a joint decision. If that would make sex better, it's been a huge boon. That's why this, you know, that's why these things are so popular.
Right.
So if you're having, you know, there are medical conditions where men's erections really are affected. And, you know, sometimes it's emotional, sometimes it's physical and emotional, and it's a good idea to go to a sex therapist. But I am certainly not opposed to men who are older men who are losing some of their erectile function using those products if it's going to make a difference in their sexual relationship. And for some women, there are certainly women who really love intercourse, and that's the main thing they love. And if you're a couple like that and a medication would help you, I don't really see anything wrong with it.
Also, for men, sometimes as men get older, particularly if they're overweight, a lot of times men's testosterone levels will go down. And just like women have menopause, men have what's called andropause or menopause. Their testosterone levels can be rather low. And sometimes the treatment for that might be testosterone, not Viagra, something of that nature.
Right, exactly.
And so in those situations, you want to talk with your doctor. In other words, if sex is a problem because of performance, then it's something to talk about. It could also be because of a medical or condition such as diabetes, where the nerves and the penis are affected, and it makes it harder to have an erection. So if there's a problem with the plumbing, it's not working just right, it's something to talk about, because it could be an indication of heart disease or diabetes.
That's right.
Or something else.
That's right. That's right, absolutely. That's a really good point to make. It has been shown to be really indicative of coronary artery disease and things like that. So it's definitely something you want to get checked out.
Right. And so we have just a little bit more time left, and I wanted to ask in closing if there were some particular points. I know that you have been involved with something called body maps, and I don't know if that's something that we have time to talk about now, or you want to talk about, or if there's anything else.
Well, we might really not have time to talk about it now.
Okay.
Because it could be a long conversation about.
Well, we'll do that another time.
Trauma. But yes, that would be wonderful.
But are there particular anything you'd like to say in closing to thoughts or tips or pointers or anything?
Well, the most optimistic thing I would like to say to people is that I've worked with people who were in their 60s who didn't enjoy sex, who learned to enjoy sex.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually something, even though your body changes in your 60s, there are so many things that can happen to help you feel better about your body. And a large percentage of people in this country have had some kind of family of origin trauma that's affected how they feel about themselves and whether they trust people and how good they feel about being in their body. And I want to say to people out there who are listening, there are some amazing psychotherapeutic techniques to deal with trauma now. There's something called EMDR, and there's something called sensory motor therapy that really works on a very physical level to help you process through bad feelings that are stored in your body. So if you haven't had a good sexual life and you haven't felt good about yourself sexually, that affects people's self-esteem, I would really like to encourage people to decide that this is something they're going to work on, because it's not the end of the road. It's actually, you could actually have had a bad sex life for, you know, most of your adulthood and then go and get some help and have a better sex life in your 60s than you ever had in your 20s or 30s or 40s or 50s.
So what you're saying is, if you want to have a good couple's relationship and good couples esteem, get your self-esteem together first, and that will radiate to your surroundings and make your couples relationship all the better.
Right. But also, you know, if there are bad feelings about yourself from, I've not been given so much as self-esteem, but if you realize that things have happened from some of the exercises we were talking about, if you realize that things have happened where it's hard for you to ask for favors, it's hard for you to trust people, and it's not related to your couple relationship, you realize it's related to the way you were brought up or mm-hmm. how you were treated in school, do that piece of work and it will change your sex life.
Awesome. Well, I want to just ask if people wanted to contact you further or to reach you, if you would mind giving your information so that people could.
Sure. People can call me on the phone. That's the best way to get me. And my phone number is 781-863-1877. Probably the best way for people to find me is to go on my website where it has all the information. It's easier to remember than a number. And so that is www.sexsmart.com, and you'll be able to figure out how to contact me that way.
Awesome. Well, we've had a wonderful discussion with Dr. Aileen Zolbrod. She's a nationally known sex therapist and is the author of a number of books, most recently Sex Smart, How Your Childhood Shaped Your Sexual Life and What You Can Do About It. And I think we'd all agree from what we've been listening to, she's darn good at it. So thank you very much for taking time out to talk with me today.
I'm sure, Mitch. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to Your Health Rocks. I'm your host, Dr. Mesh Seibel, and remember, everyone, it's better to stay well than to get well. So stay well, everyone.